This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hope everybody is staying safe with Hurricane Ian approaching, and we're going to try to bang out a few of these podcasts for you while you're doing whatever it is, preparing your house or you know, making precautions and all of that. But we want you to get your mailbag questions in so that we can answer some of those for you. You can do that by sending them to us on Twitter, at SportsDayTB. You can reach me on Twitter, at NFL Stroud. My email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. Get those to us now before perhaps some of our power runs out. Let's hope not. I'll tell you, this hurricane thing, you know, the thing about it, Steve, is we would not ever want a direct hit on any community, much less the Tampa Bay, with all our waterways and all of that. The worst part of it is if you sit there and wait and keep the news on, you know, and Jim Cantore's like broadcasting from your front door, like that part is more stressful to me than the actual storm.
It really is. And you know, look, you've lived here your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I've been here for 12 years.
Yeah.
This is for our region. This is the scariest storm I've seen coming.
Really?
I don't know if it'll end up being that way.
Yeah.
But the way
I thought Irma was pretty darn scary. I mean, that was going to possibly hit as a 4.
It was.
It was Category 5 in the Gulf. But
the way this one's hugging the coast,
mm,
which is what creates all the storm surge.
That's true, yeah.
And you know, when it hits Tampa Bay, it's projected at this point to be a 3.
Right.
But Sarasota, Bradenton area, it's a 4.
Yeah,
but it's hugging the coast, and you know, if it's 10 or 20 miles outside the coastline, it's bad. If it's 30 or 40, it's a lot better. I mean, mm-hmm, just that it doesn't take much to make this really bad storm surge for the area.
Yeah, that's true. That
and
part
it's supposed
is true
to slow down as it hits Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and that is really bad because it just, mm-hmm, beats up the coastline with all kinds of water and waves and things like that.
Well, with this storm surge, it's going to go through 2 high tides and 2 low tides, and that's bad, mm, because, mm, it's going to slow down.
Right.
And so, you know, your hope is, and as all the meteorologists have said, is it keeps pushing west, and there's some heavy shear coming off. So if it were to go west
shear,
and head
the
to the panhandle.
Shear's supposed to knock it down, yeah.
If it goes west and goes to the panhandle, they say it may only be a tropical storm when it hit land.
Oh, wow.
That's how much of that shear is coming down, but it's not going to be there before Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
At least that's what I've gotten from Dennis Phillips and Paul Delgado, and you know, I try to watch them all.
Yeah.
We have some great meteorologists in this town.
We really do.
Mm-hmm. But this one, and you know, I used to run WFLA radio, so I would be tuned into this, and I covered some hurricanes in Birmingham and that. This one for Florida seems to be the – it may not be the worst one since I've been here. I wasn't here in 04 and 05, mm-hmm, for all those storms.
Right.
But this one just how it's hugging the coast just is not good for the storm surge for anybody that lives anywhere near the coast. I mean, I'm far enough inland for my house and family where, you know, I don't have a storm surge problem. I mean, wind and rain and, you know, anything loose, trees falling are problems and power. But if you're along the coast or anywhere near the water, the bay, that area, this one could be scary.
Yeah, I agree. Listen, and a lot of people live in Florida, and I've always wanted to live on the water. I never have, but there's always 1 or 2 times a year where I'm glad I didn't, and this is one of them, because those storms would frighten me. And I know a lot of people that have to evacuate their homes, and that's, it's a very, you know, emotional thing. I mean, imagine, you know, you can't pack up everything you take with you. Maybe some some valuables or some photos or things like that on the off chance that you do get flooding or you get a direct hit or something like that. But it's a very emotional thing to have to leave your home and go somewhere else and ride it out somewhere else and then wonder, you know, what you're coming back to. And a lot of people that live on the coast when these big hurricanes hit don't have much to come back to. And, you know, so it's going to be some, you know, some very scary times in nervous days. I just hope, you know, like everybody else, that we have, you know, a minimal impact, whatever that means. But you're right. If it spins out there, slows down, batters the coast, works its way sort of up the west coast of Florida, it can impact so much of the entire state. And it's large enough that if it were to go even further east, the whole storm could cover the state from coast to coast. It's a large hurricane. And, you know, we don't know what it'll be, you know, category 3, 4, 5, whatever. But it's a large enough hurricane to take every precaution. And I think people are, you know, when you live here, as long as I have, and they haven't taken a direct hit, you do get a false sense of security. You know what I mean? But if I lived anywhere on the coast, I'm evacuating. The one thing you can't do is try to ride it out on the beaches or, you know, where there's going to be that storm surge and all that flooding. You just can't do it. And I wouldn't encourage anybody to try to attempt that because you could get really, really hurt or killed. And nobody wants that. But, it could be a mess here. The power outages are going to be significant, especially in St. Petersburg, where my mom lives, and we've got her out of there for this storm. But they have a lot of overhead wires instead of the underground with some of the new construction in different parts of the Tampa Bay area. So all that gets knocked down by trees, by branches, all this stuff. So, you know, it's going to be very nerve-wracking, and hopefully we avoid the brunt of it. I remember 2004, and somehow we got on hurricane coverage, but why not? It's on everybody's mind. I remember 2004. The Bucks have been involved in a couple of hurricane decisions, really. Back in 2004, Charlie was headed right for Tampa Bay. And even though Charlie came ashore, I think, as a Category 1, it was a strong, little, powerful Category 1. Like, it didn't have the bands of showers like this one has, like Ian does, but the winds were real significant. And I remember it was about 50 miles off the coast and headed right for Tampa Bay. And everybody was, you know, predicting the apocalypse and all of that. And then it turned 3 degrees. I remember this specifically. It was a 3-degree turn a little bit to the west before it got, or to the east, I'm sorry, before it got to Tampa. And that was about a difference of about 100 miles. And so instead, it washed ashore around Captiva and Punta Gorda and destroyed a good part of those coastal communities and then churned its way through Central Florida. And the irony of this, that whole thing, when the Bucks in 2004, they were training in Lake Buena Vista at Disney's Wild World of Sports. That was their training camp home. And so they were over at Disney, and they were staying at the Celebration Hotel not far from Lake Buena Vista. And because the storm was barreling down to Tampa, they canceled practice one day, and Gruden let the players and the coaches go back to Tampa, you know, to make sure their property was, you know, battened down and all that, and then invited whatever players, families, or, you know, wives, children, pets, whatever, to come back to the training facility, to the area of Central Florida, and stay, you know, with them at the hotel, at the Celebration Hotel and all that. And many or most of the players did just that. They came back home, secured their homes, they brought their families back to the hotel. That hurricane passed directly over Celebration. And they were in the basement, if there is such a thing, or the lowest floor, I guess you'd say, because it can't dig very far in Florida. But they were down there as the hurricane passed over them. And there was significant damage to trees and things like that. So they actually went into harm's way. And it just shows you sort of how unpredictable everything is. And then the last hurricane, which was, 2017, I think, Irma, which was a big storm, and it was scary. And Jim Cantore was standing on the, you know, in on, you know, Franklin Street or something like that in Tampa. that one scared everyone, and for good reason. Enormous, powerful, powerful storm that, again, was headed right towards Tampa Bay. So, you know, my family went to Chicago. I got everything secured, or as secure as I can make it. And the Bucs were supposed to play the Dolphins. It was week one in the NFL season.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to play the Dolphins. Well, as fate would have it, it was an easy decision because the NFL looked at the schedule and saw where they both had the same bye week in November. And so they said, eh, easy enough. Your bye week, Miami and Tampa Bay, will be week one. And so that meant they had to play 16 straight games with no time in between. But they gave them the bye week, and so they were off as Irma passed. And it also avoided a direct hit with Tampa Bay. Kind of went south here and kind of inland. And the problem was that the Bucs decided to help get families and teammates and everything out of harm's way. They chartered a plane to Charlotte, to North Carolina. And a bunch of players and coaches, whatever, took them up on it. So they went to North Carolina. It wasn't mandatory. It was just available to them. And then, you know, for those that were in flood zones, whatever. And then some other players decided, well, I'm not staying here, but I'm going to get in my car, and I'm going to drive up to Georgia or Alabama or Louisiana, whatever. And so many of those did that. The problem was, when the storm did miss, sort of, it was impossible to get home. Now, they had a charter flight that brought their group home, but then you had a bunch of players that were trying to drive back, and there was no gas because everybody had hoarded all the gasoline, thinking that we were going to be without power and nobody would have gas. And so their cars are running out of gas on I-75, mm-hmm. and they're calling in saying, where do I get gas?
Well, I evacuated to Charlotte for that storm, too. I have family there.
Yeah.
And driving back, there was, like, Georgia, all the gas stations were closed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and if there was a station on I-75 or somewhere that had it, the lines were 2 and 3 miles long.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, well, Mike, I can't sit here. It was, you know, very hot. It's September. So then the Bucs were to host the Chicago Bears the next week. But the week after that, they were playing at Minnesota. And so thinking that maybe their facility would be unusable or maybe they wouldn't be able to play a game, they didn't really know. But they did know that in the case of Irma, that there might not be much left to come back to. So their contingency was they were going to go to the University of Minnesota. And because that was the third game they had was at Minnesota. And they thought, well, we can hunker down up there and play the Vikings after the Bears because you may have to move the game to Chicago, whatever, if the stadium's flattened or the, you know, too much emergency service. And that's what happens is your emergency service people are all required to, you know, do hurricane relief, and you don't have enough to really operate an NFL game, even if there's no damage to the stadium.
Well, and the league and the team doesn't want to take those resources away from the community.
There you go.
It's one, the community really can't afford to do that, but the team doesn't want to be that, taking those resources mm-hmm. away from the community when, you know, the community needs help.
Right. And so, you know, all the guys that were trying to come back, it was kind of a mess, but they were going to go to Minnesota, stay there, and then play the game. And I, thinking that, well, they're going to close the Tampa airport, and my family was in Chicago, I hopped a plane to Chicago because I thought, well, if they're going to Minnesota, I'd have a much easier time from Chicago getting there. But no. The hurricane missed, thank goodness, and at least the brunt of it. And the hard part, again, was trying to get back home on a flight. I ended up going through Orlando, but those flights were booked, expensive, people all trying now to get back in the state. It's always disruptive. And, you know, Tom Brady on his podcast, as we finally get to the Bucs, said that, you know, this could be used as an excuse. Like, they're going to go through a bunch of adversity here. You know, they're going to have to practice somewhere else, sleep on the road, kind of like they were, you know, not doing joint workouts, but sort of like that when they're, you know, going through their preparations for the Kansas City Chiefs. And then they don't really know where they're going to play the game. They're hopeful that they can play it, you know, Sunday at Raymond James, but it might get moved, you know, down there to Miami. We just don't know exactly what's going to happen. But it's a big week. They're playing the Kansas City Chiefs. And you've got to prepare. And when you're in a week of preparation, it's you know, very heightened, you know, stress levels, and they're coming off a loss and all that. And now, you know, they got to bond together and be together and just going to be different. It's adversity. It's a lot of adversity you don't normally deal with in a regular season. So, you know, Brady talked about it, and, you know, he said he got his house secure and all of that, but he's never seen anything like this. I mean, in New England, you know, not too many hurricanes, I would think.
Do we know which house he has secure?
Well, no. I mean, I do know, but it's not the Jeter Mansion, I can tell you that.
Well, no, they're about ready to demolish that one, but...
Yeah, which is incredible that, that's happening, but that's another story. But, yeah, no, he's out there still on Davis Islands, and, you know, he said he had to get some stuff from the outside, which we all do. But, yeah, we'll see. You know, the Bucks are going to go down there. They've invited the families and the wives, as I said, and the children if they want to get out of harm's way, much like they did in the other hurricanes. So that's very generous of the Bucks. And then, you know, if the game's not going to be Sunday night, they'll have to flex another game for NBC for Sunday Night Football. So that could occur as early as today. Or, you know, the plan for the NFL is let's just ride this out a little bit. Let's wait a couple days. We still want to play the Sunday night game on NBC in Tampa. Maybe it'll stay out to sea. Maybe it'll come ashore, you know, north, way north of here. Like, you know, just waiting to see sort of what the damage assessment is. But it's, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's a scary thing. And that's what Brady said. He goes, you know, you hear about these hurricanes and then you're facing one, and it's kind of scary. We had a chance to talk to Todd Bowles about this failed 2-point, you know, conversion attempt that wound up actually being the difference in the football game. And he had some interesting sort of take on it, and they're asking the league to review some stuff. And then also, you got to hear the story about the game day operations staff, and I can only imagine the meeting they had with Todd Bowles on Monday afternoon. We'll get into that in just a second. But first, you know, check out May Electric Solar. We're talking about your electric, and of course, you know, it's going to remain hot outside for the foreseeable future. Hopefully your electric stays on. But here's something you can do to lower your electric bill, and that is May Electric Solar. They've been in the business for 12 years. They've been installing solar electric systems. There's a lot of these companies out there, but May Electric Solar guarantees their work with a 30-year labor and services warranty. Plus, with every installation, you get $750 worth of surge protection for all your appliances. That's what they call the May difference. If you visit their Hudson showroom, May Electric displays all its products. It conducts on-site testing. You can see what they're going to install, and get this, they don't use subcontractors, so you know exactly who is doing the job. Start saving today. Call the solar energy experts, May Electric Solar, at 727-819-2862. You can schedule a free estimate. You can lower your electric bill all year long and preserve the quality of your life and the quality of your appliances through every storm season. May Electric Solar, 727-819-2862. All right, I'm not sure we got much more of an explanation as to exactly what went wrong or who was responsible for what went wrong for the delay of game penalty on the 2-point conversion. However, there's been a little bit of a controversy brewing about this play, and it stems from the fact that everyone who watched the game apparently saw that the play clock started at 20 seconds and not 25. And, you know, typically for a play like that, it would be at 25, unless, and this is not insignificant, unless, if you know, the play before it, of course, has to be a scoring play. And if that's under review from upstairs, and inside of 2 minutes, it can only be reviewed from upstairs, then they will put the clock at 40 seconds, and then they will start to run it down, and then they'll put a pause on it at 20. And that pause is there, and then, you know, once they clear you to snap the ball, you've got 20, not 25 seconds. And so teams have known that this is going to be the case, and there was more than ample time for them to go over, call a play, whatnot, and get it off. You know, you watch the replay, and Tom Brady, with about 9 or 10 seconds, is trying to get Cole Beasley to move closer, you know, to the line of scrimmage, to the formation, and towards the tackle. And so he's directing traffic. He gets down to about 4, and everybody seems set. And now he's clapping his hands, you know, basically saying, hey, you know, snap the ball, right? I mean, that's what you needed to do. You needed to get the clocks in front of you. Robert Haynes, he needed to be aware that it's running down and that ball has to be snapped. They didn't get the playoff. I think it would have been a successful run by Fournette. Who's to say? But then, of course, they move him back to the seven and they throw incomplete and the game is over. But, you know, we've said this, like, this is professional football. Like, that should never happen. And Bowles said on Monday, we've all played the game long enough to know that there's really no excuse. Like, the ball has to be snapped, you know. And yet, I know Brady was going, you know, through some plays that he was changing. I always felt like Fournette was supposed to be the guy to get the ball, but I think they might have had a pass play called originally, and he was checking off to it, making sure his offensive lineman kind of knew everything that was going on. So I understand sort of, you know, how it happened, but, man, like, it's just – it's hard to believe you can lose a game. And, you know, Brady said on his podcast that I was listening to Monday night, he was like, you know, you really don't spend a whole lot of time sort of rehearsing two-point plays. Like, it's not, you know, there's a lot of situations in your play sheet, right? Because normally it's just you're going for two, right? Maybe you missed an extra point early in the game, whatever. But rarely is it like you either make this two-point and go into overtime or the game is over on the last play. And that's sort of what it came down to. I don't know that Bowles will get an explanation. He thinks, you know, one time it was 25 seconds on the clock, and then the next time it was 20. I think we've explained why it was run down to 20 and halted and then went on after that. Bottom line, professional football, professional sports, get the ball snapped. That cannot happen.
Well, and on the touchdown, they almost had a delay.
They did. Yeah, essentially the clock ran out.
I mean, yeah, it was at zero when he snapped it.
That's right.
But you get that extra. The official has to see it hit zero. Then he looks to see if it snapped yet.
Yeah.
And then throws the flag. And, you know, it was within that split-second window.
Which is an odd system when you consider the NBA has had a shot clock for years, and what do? The red light either comes on and the ball's in your hand or it's not. Right?
Well, but we're still dealing with a sport that brings out a chain that's 10 yards long measure, you know. And to be honest,
two old men in a striped shirt with a chain and two poles is how we determine who's going to keep their jobs at the end of the year.
Well, and we have a pile-up tackling the runner, and we know exactly where the ball was when he went down, so that's where we're going to play.
Yeah, right. Oh, sure we do. Yeah. And we know when it crosses the goal line because, well, either the camera tells us or not, you know. Far be it from them to, I don't know, join the new millennium and put a, you know, a chip in the ball that would tell you whether or not it crosses the plane without really materially affecting the football itself. I mean, they've been doing this in tennis for years. I mean, how many matches
soccer
have you seen?
Soccer has it too.
Soccer has it.
The goal line.
Yeah. I mean, baseball could execute that little strike zone if they wanted to tomorrow.
They are in the minors right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, everybody is using technology to their advantage to get plays right, but no. Let's stretch those chains out, babe. So it was frustrating. And here's the one that was really bizarre. And I had to go back and listen to the interview because, you know, we're trying to write stories and get downstairs and talk to players. Apparently, Aaron Rodgers was interviewed on the field after the game. And among the things he said was, look, I noticed something that probably shouldn't have been on there on the Jumbotron, but it was a shot of their sideline. Now, they're actively trying to call a two-point play to win the game. When Rodgers looks up at the scoreboard and sees something, he says, that alerts him to something that the Bucs are about to prepare to do, and then he relays that to his head coach, LaFleur, who then obviously must have told Joe Barry. But can you imagine how that – and so we asked Bowles about it, and it was probably around 12:15, 12:30, about this report that, basically whatever you ran – it's hard enough to score anyway, but whatever you ran might have been tipped off in some way by the scoreboard camera. And he goes, yeah, you know, as far as the game day staff goes, yeah, we're meeting with them later today. I can't imagine how that went, you know. Hey, is there a reason why we're sitting here trying to pick the play to tie the game after all the struggles we've had that your camera is even pointed at our sideline, much less the play sheet or the conversations or reading lips or whatever that seemed to tip Aaron Rodgers and his guys off? It could not have gone well. that if that person is still employed, I'm shocked by it.
Well, I guess the question is, what was on the scoreboard? What were they showing?
I don't know. I don't know that you could show something that
what
would
was
alert
seen.
It.
I mean, you know, unless it was, you know, they try to hide signs or, you know, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't at the game, so I have no idea what was on the scoreboard at that point.
Right. It's just bizarre to me that, A, you can glean any information at all from it.
Well,
and
here's the thing. Every team in the NFL now is going through this week.
Oh, yeah. They're all going to their staffs and saying, don't you shoot the sideline when we're trying to make a play selection for the game, you know? But, yeah, it's definitely a warning shot. Just kind of a bizarre – just that whole sequence was really weird, you know? And Brady's like, look, you know, the funny thing is, as badly as they played, and they were awful, and they only scored their third, you know, offensive touchdown of the season – but if they'd have gotten that two-point conversion, won the coin toss, and won, I'm telling you, it would have been the more dramatic wins they've had under Brady. You know, and that's kind of what he was thinking about, I guess, on his drive home was, you know, sort of like, it's about being in the arena. It's about, you know, there were 70,000 people. It was an NFL or a Raymond James record crowd of just under 70 even. And he's like, you know, you're thinking about the game, and you're just like, hey, just feel grateful I can go back out here again and he's healthy. And, you know, of course, now he's got to go through Miami to do this. But you take the losses hard. The wins, you feel relief as opposed to celebration. You kind of just feel relieved. And then, you know, the losses are really hard to get over. But they got to get over it because they got a lot of adversity ahead of them.
Well, here's the thing. And granted, this week didn't get easier because of Hurricane Ian. Yeah. And we don't know what the game's going to look like on Sunday.
Right.
But if you can beat the Chiefs, you'll have gone through the gauntlet of at Dallas, at New Orleans, Green Bay at home, Kansas City at home, and you'd be 3-1.
I think 3-1 is exceptional.
You would take that, no, even though the offense has looked putrid at times.
Right, right.
If you told me through the first four games of this season they're 3-1, I'd take it every day.
Every day and twice on Sunday, man. I mean, that is really impressive to play those teams. Now, here's what I don't know, and as we're doing this, the Cowboys are kind of scuffling with the Giants right now. I don't know how good Dallas is. I mean, certainly without Dak, they're not very good.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't very good with him on opening night. But I just don't know. Like, I don't know if they're any good. I don't think they are. And then the Saints, I thought they were everybody's darling to make it to the NFC Championship game and maybe even win the Super Bowl. I don't know, man. I don't see it.
Well,
I know who the quarterback is.
And those teams probably aren't that good right now because that's the only way that the Bucs are in these games with their offense playing as poorly as they are. I mean, the defense has played well, but
they've gotten some help.
If you were playing the teams that are playing the best in the NFL now, you'd have been blown out, even with a great defense.
I think so.
I mean, the offense is going to have to figure something out.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not good. Now, you know, you didn't have Evans, Jones, or Godwin last week.
Correct.
You know Evans is back this week.
That's right.
We'll see about
and with
the
rest. Fresh legs. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they still got to figure out a second running back.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up because I wrote a column in the Sunday's Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com that essentially says, look, you're going to run Leonard Fournette in the ground. Like, two things are going to happen. One is you're not going to have him when you want him in December and January. But two, and this is already happening, he's not going to be as productive because everybody knows that you're just trying to ride this horse. Like, you know, he's touching the ball so many times that all we got to do is gang up on Leonard Fournette and hope they don't throw it over our heads. But man, I mean, Lenny has played so hard these last 2 weeks, has nothing to show for it. Nothing. Poor rushing average. You know, had the 127 yards in the first game. And I'm sorry, but you used the draft pick on Rashard White, and you thought enough of him and his maturity that you compared him to Chris Godwin in terms of the kind of guy he was, how it mattered to him, how, you know, studious he was, all of that, got into his playbook. And then, you know, you get into the regular season. He played a lot in the preseason. He made a lot of plays. You know, he had that little bit of Le'Veon Bell running style and all of that. Could catch the ball. And so you're thinking, okay, well, there's a guy that could at least be maybe their third down back, or he could be that receiver you split out wide, or what have you. But none of that transpires. You stick with Lenny, and you keep running the guy, and keep running the guy, and he's not productive anymore. And, I mean, for that matter, Keyshawn Vaughn was active, and all Keyshawn Vaughn did when Leonard Fournette had a pulled hamstring last year in the playoff game against Philadelphia is he stepped in and went off, played great, you know, helped them through that game. And Leonard Fournette was grateful we got to play the next week. But I don't get it, man. I mean, what are these guys on the roster? And finally, Bull said today, he goes, well, yeah, we got to play him. Like, there's no excuse. Like, we got to play him. There's no excuses not to play those guys.
No, it's a 17-week season. Right. And you know, there's very few running backs that can be a bell cow and just do it all.
Mm-hmm.
In the way the league is today. It doesn't mm-hmm. happen. And if Rashad White isn't ready, okay. But now you start to worry. I mean, Jason Light and his staff has done a tremendous job drafting guys the last 4 or 5 seasons.
Yeah.
Maybe 6. And you can just go through a lot of the draft picks of how well they've done. But maybe they've whiffed on both running backs with Keyshawn Vaughn.
I mean, it's possible, but I don't have a sample size. Well, you know what I mean? Like, they loved him, and I'm not exaggerating, they loved him in training camp. Mm-hmm. They loved him in the joint practices. They loved how he was assignment ready and all of that. And then we get in the regular season, it's like there's no trust.
Well, is that Byron Leftwich or is that Tom Brady?
I think it's Brady or both. You know, I mean, Brady's not making substitutions, but we know what he knows.
Well, but they talked about it during the week. Him and Byron are talking, going, "Hey, I trust Leonard in this play. I don't trust him doing this
for sure."
This, you know, I mean, Brady may not be in the game, going, "Don't put him in," but yeah. They've had the conversations during the week. I mean, right. If Todd Bowles is saying we've got to play them, that means I don't like the decision being made. I don't like the decision that's been made by the staff.
And that's always amused me too. Like, I've had coaches, including Tony Dungy, I made a suggestion about, like, you know, well, so and so should be starting, and it's like, yeah, he probably should, but why isn't he? Well, because the position coach, you know, like, they leave a lot of things up to people, and I don't know. It seems pretty obvious to me that. And I listen. Leonard Fournette is a beast. He's a monster of a guy. He plays with immense effort and mm-hmm. heart. Mm-hmm. And, man, does he take a lot of hits. He also runs to contact. He's also a guy that I don't think has the greatest vision in the world in terms of, like, picking your way through holes and things like that. Outstanding running back, all that aside, there's room for more than one in the league. Very few people just ride one bell cow guy. And if he's going to be on the team, if you're going to spend draft capital, hell, you might as well play the dude. And I know that it's, you know, Brady has said it, and I think he might have said it on his podcast on Monday, you know, that, the trust you have in older players. You know, they're talking about Cole Beasley. Like, Cole Beasley was all excited to play, you know, but on a critical fourth down, he made a big play. And, you know, Brady just wants to know he can count on, so.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So as the Bucks head to Miami, the Tampa Bay Rays are in Cleveland to begin a series tonight against the Guardians.
You got it right. That's good.
Yeah, I know, right? So close to saying the other name. That Red Wolves. No, that's Indians. No, that's Arkansas State. I get all confused. But yeah, the Guardians. And then they're as we do this podcast, they're like two and a half games out of the top wild card spot.
They're two. Actually, now they're three back because Toronto beat.
They're three. Oh wow,
the Yankees.
Okay.
On Monday night, so.
And we got 10 to play, am I correct?
9 to play.
9 to play, wow.
So
it's going to be tough.
So we were talking about this at the game over the weekend, the Rays game.
Yeah.
So Cleveland right now is hot. They actually have a better record than the Rays and the Mariners. You know, for a while, everyone was like, "Oh, you want to play the Guardians in the
you want to play Cleveland, yeah."
So, would you rather, assuming Toronto takes the top wild card and they're in a controlling position,
they should,
at this point,
yeah.
Would you rather go to Toronto or would you rather go to Cleveland?
I think I'd rather go to Cleveland. I think.
Well, you know Toronto well, and you won the season series,
right?
You play them pretty well, generally,
right?
But I actually looked ahead, so I would rather go to Cleveland and be the third wild card instead of second. And the reason is your second round matchup's against New York, where if you're the top wild card, the Toronto matchup, Toronto and whoever they play, that winner would go to play Houston.
Mm.
And I don't think I want to play Houston.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I think they're hands down the best team in the American League this year.
Yeah, and they beat these guys up just a couple days ago.
So I'd rather, and they're gonna face off
again
this weekend in Houston. So I'd rather go to New York. I'd rather wait for Houston until the ALCS if you have to.
Well, it's gonna be. I mean, listen, I thought the catchword was tank for Terry, wasn't it, or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now the Orioles are only
tank for Tito.
Yeah. That's it. The Orioles are only 4.5 behind the Rays at this point, and they're winning tonight.
Not impossible.
So that would put them 4 games back of the Rays with 9 to play.
Not impossible.
And Seattle's right there too. The Rays are a half game ahead of Seattle right now.
Yeah. And Seattle has got some really top pitching.
They do, but they've got Eugenio Suarez and Julio Rodriguez both on the IL now. They've got the weaker schedule to play, but they've got some big-name players
some big
out.
Pieces missing, yeah.
But the Rays, and you know, we didn't talk a lot about this because you guys were at the game yesterday, but Brendan Lau out for the season now. Shane Baugh having Tommy John out for next season. You're hoping to get him back for spring training 2024.
It's terrible, by the way. Jeez.
You know, that. Can this offense do enough in the playoffs without Brendan Lau in there now?
Well, they pretty much have had to do whatever it is they're going to do without him all year.
Mm-hmm. But I you're mean, going against better pitching staffs in the playoffs, presumably.
Yeah. Look, I don't think this team is going to hit in the postseason. I haven't seen it. I don't know what would make you think it's going to happen. I think Wander Franco and Arozarena are just kind of those players that will produce.
Mm-hmm. I think Yandy Diaz has to produce
bright.
In the playoffs.
But I don't know who else will.
I don't know who will, but he's got to. If he doesn't produce, I don't think they have a shot in the postseason.
You mean Randy?
No, Yandy.
Randy
Diaz. And Wander
yeah.
are.
Oh, yeah. I would include him in that list,
but,
yes.
But, I mean, you know, Wander and Randy hit last year. Randy, of course, hit the year before.
Yeah, but Yandy cannot disappear now.
No. The year he's had?
No. No way.
He's got to step up and hit.
Yeah, he's got to do what he's been doing all season long. If he doesn't at least, you know, do that and get on base and mm-hmm. start some innings, that would be horrific because he's had such a good year. Fantastic season at the plate.
And the other thing over the weekend that happened to the Rays is on Saturday, all of a sudden the Rays rolled out a tribute video to Kevin Kiermaier.
You sent me that, and I got to thinking about it, and it's like, wow, like Kiermaier must have been in on the gig, right?
They asked him ahead of time. They wanted to honor him.
Yeah.
And he was touched by it and honored that they would want to honor him.
Right.
But it nobody was expecting it. It was like we all kind of looked at each other like, what?
Saying goodbye?
And granted, you know, he's under contract for, well, sort of. There's a
They're
club
not
going
to pick up his option, right?
There's a
we know
$13
that.
Million dollar option for next year.
Yeah, there's no way.
Or a $2.5 million buyout. What you could do is you could either buy him out, pay him $2.5 million, and he's done.
And then re-sign him, yeah.
Or you could negotiate with them and say, hey, come back for 2 years, $12 million.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that range. Would he want to do that? Would he want to stay here? And would the Rays want him to stay here? I
don't know.
I think if he stays here, a couple things have to happen. You're either probably trading a Jose Siri at that point, and you're going to stay with Kevin Kiermaier there.
No, I'm not trading Siri. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And the other part that probably has to happen is Kevin Kiermaier's got to agree that he's not only going to play center field. There are times you're going to put him in left or right.
Yeah, I like that.
And I don't know if he's willing to do that. I have no clue. Assuming he wants to stay here, assuming you don't find someone that's willing to pay him a lot of money to where he says, hey, I got to go, man. This team wants to pay me $13 million. You're going to offer me $13 for $2. I got to go. You know, I don't know what he's thinking. But if I'm the Rays, I mean, you've got Arozarena's in your outfield. You've got Margot. You've got Siri. You got Josh Lowe, who you're still high on. Didn't have the best season this year, but but you're still very high on him. You know, you're adding, if you add Kiermaier to that lineup, you still got Harold Ramirez. You know, where's everyone fit in?
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, it felt like goodbye. Kevin Kiermaier said it was they wanted to honor me, and I was touched, and so I said yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it sure felt like a goodbye video.
Well, you know,
and maybe
it did.
Just because it caught by surprise.
I'm guessing Kiermaier has more baseball in him, but I'll say this. I don't think it was an accident. If he doesn't, he was up in the broadcast booth the other night with Dwayne Statz and Brian Anderson, and you know what? It wasn't bad. I mean, they were more or less interviewing him, but he had some stuff to say. And, you know, he's got the look and the, you know, McDreamy eyes and all that stuff. I could easily see him slipping in as a broadcaster someplace. Now, whether that's next year or not, can't really say because I don't know. But it wouldn't. But you, I'm convinced he could do it.
Yeah. And the other part of it, too, and I agree he probably could, is that I joked, but they didn't. I said, when's the Mike Zunino tribute video coming?
That's right.
Now, granted, he hasn't been around nearly as long as Kevin Kiermaier. But
yeah,
he is,
but come on,
but
man.
He is a free agent at the end of the year. He's not. There's no option. He's a
there's
free
no
agent.
Option. You got a bid on him. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I think there's a good chance they bring him back. Although, to be honest, Francisco Mejia and Christian Bethencourt have done very well the second half of the season.
They've done extremely well, and I've been impressed by their defense.
Well, and that's what's really stepped up, even throwing out base runners too. Like Mejia
totally,
wasn't
yeah.
very good at, and all of a sudden he's gotten a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how he's handled the pitching staff has been great too. So, I mean, I think they want to bring Zunino back, but I also think they're going, we got some options here.
Right, right.
You know, so it'll be interesting what the Rays do this offseason, but hopefully it's after a long postseason, of course.
Well, and that's, I don't know, where I would get nervous as a Rays fan would be like, show me you can hit in the postseason. Like, and not just one guy, right? Arozarena lifted them, you know, all the way to the World Series, but show me you can do it consistently. And they haven't scored runs consistently all year. And when you get in the postseason, you're playing teams that have not one, not two, but three really, really quality starters. And so, you know, that's the part that I'm, you know, and really Shane McClanahan is starting to lose some, you know, velocity. He's not throwing strikes lately. I don't know that he's going to be as electric as he once was earlier in the season. I just got questions about him this year. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Maybe that's what they need is people to doubt them and to say, yeah, you guys really aren't going to do anything, right? And then, boom, maybe they'll put it together. I don't know.
I mean, Drew Rasmussen pitched well Saturday. Took the loss, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Gave up one
yeah,
run.
Yeah, he pitched well.
Gave up one run, but you went against Alek Manoah.
Right.
Who's been phenomenal this year.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was a disappointing series against the Blue Jays because you took the first two.
Right.
And you're just like, we just need one of the next two.
Mm-hmm.
And you lost Saturday against Manoah. It was a close game. You're like, okay, no problem.
Manoah's got him before.
Yeah, Shane McClanahan went out and didn't pitch very well.
Right. Yeah, some important decisions that the Rays will have to make. And we'll see what happens with Kevin Kiermaier and just, you know, them going forward throughout the rest of the regular season. They're going to be on the road for a while. I know that, speaking of, you know, back evacuations and things like that, Mark Tompkin battened down the hatches on his condo on St. Pete Beach, and he's off to places with the Rays. So hope everything stays safe with him. And we want you to stay safe as well, and we want you to save money on your electric bill. And you can do that by calling our friends at May Electric Solar. They've been in business 12 years. They will give you a 30-year labor warranty and service warranty, $750 worth of service protection. Call the solar energy experts, May Electric Solar, 727-819-2862. Schedule a free estimate. Lower your electric bill all year long. May Electric Solar, 727-819-2862. Get your mailbag questions in to us. We will have time for those tomorrow. And then, of course, later in the week, we're going to talk to Matt Baker all about college football and, you know, maybe some wobbly coaches starting to shape up around college football as well. Maybe one right here at USF. I'm not sure what's going on with Jeff Scott, but he's got a big game against East Carolina that they need to win. So we will do that. We'll also follow the Bucks and their doings down in Miami. In the meantime, stay safe from the storm. Make sure that you're out of harm's way. Evacuate if they tell you to. And we want you right back here on Sports Day Tampa Bay tomorrow. For Steve Burstick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.